has the right to tell what they do not want to hear. CNN, MSNBC, Fox News. Tired of the same repetitive government narratives? Then wave goodbye to the distractions and rhetoric of corporate media. For this is Anti-Media Radio.
But I want to get the language right.
The government is in trouble.
What we need in the United States is not violence and lawlessness, but is love and wisdom and compassion toward one another.
What's your definition of me?
And now, here's your host, S.M. Gibson.
My name is S.M. Gibson, and you are listening to Anti-Media Radio, your alternative to the mainstream garbage, to the corporate narrative, to the lies of the rhetoric of the media. You have found your home here tonight. It is November the 10th, 2015. Couple of stats that we always like to go over at the beginning of every episode that corporate media somehow doesn't really want to focus on, doesn't keep it to themselves, I should say. So far, unfortunately, we have had 1,020 people who have been killed by police officers this year alone. We've also had 109 officers that have died while in the line of duty. The city of Chicago, with their strict gun laws, that's where our country is headed with those kind of laws. See kind of how, when they're enacted, what happens in the community. We, so far this year alone in 2015, had 26 people shot, 440 homicides. And the American ally, our government loves them, 151 beheadings by Saudi Arabia so far in 2015. A lot of other huge stuff in the news right now that we're going to talk about tonight, from the debates that went on this evening to Edward Snowden basically, kind of being exonerated a little bit. A federal judge ruled yesterday that the NSA collecting your data is unconstitutional, among a myriad of a whole bunch of other stuff. Joined always in the studio with us, our wonderful producer, Mr. Shannon Madden. Shannon, how's it going?
You couldn't let it go 5 minutes without bringing up those damn debates. Oh, my anger. Man, I feel for anybody who was through every single moment of the wretched coming out of each candidate's mouth. Flat tax is a new thing now. Gee, this is the first time I've heard everybody talking about a flat tax on that stage.
Yeah, we know how that's going to happen. The golden boy they've chosen, Rubio, is not going to
happen. He ain't having no part of that, buddy. I got $1 trillion lined up for defense right now. All you got to do is throw that ballot my way, and trust me, I will keep us safe, secure, and free. Bless America.
We weren't fortunate enough to catch every last second of the debate.
Because Trump is sending all of the current illegal immigrants back home. So if you're an illegal immigrant listening to this broadcast, start packing.
Yeah, Donald Trump's
the wall's going up, and you're going to be on Donald the other side of it when it's all said and done. Or if you decide to stick around and decide to vote for other candidates, then you're going to be penalized. Either way, it's going to cost you some money, or it's going to cost you a trip back to Mexico. One of the two.
The most entertaining part of the debate that I caught was when they were asking Trump about the TPP, which are. What, last episode, last week, we covered it in detail. You can catch it on YouTube if you want to go YouTube and check out last week's episode where we talked in depth about the TPP.
And all other anti-media radio broadcasts.
But we had Trump talking China this, China that, China this with the TPP in regards to it. And then they got done with the question and went back to the moderator. And Rand Paul spoke up and said it may be worth noting that China's not part of the TPP, and Trump just shut up, and the next thing you know, the music for the commercial was coming up.
And that was the weirdest part about it, because the music for the commercial came up, Rand Paul was still talking, there was more, you know, back and forth going on, and suddenly the commercial music just disappeared.
It was odd.
And the timing of that was the strangest thing of all. Both of us in the studio are huge college football fans, and we know a bad call when we see it. Yeah, we know somebody got paid for that one.
It's true. I promise I'm going to get to everybody's calls this evening. Line's already blowing up here, but we will get to your calls later on in the program. Jeremy Martis, let's talk about that for a second.
It's a horrible, wretched, vile story that is getting worse and worse and worse. Now, it's funny, I caught this story, and I've been keeping up with this story like a lot of the other police brutality stories, which are just, you know, I'm sorry, but anytime that I'm on social media or digging around for news, any police brutality case always is going to pop up. I'm going to check it out, and I kind of at least see in plain black and white, or in some cases full color, the police state that we now live in, and remind myself of that daily. In Louisiana, we had two police officers were chasing a man for conflicting stories or conflicting reasons, but they were chasing a man, they cornered him, they wound up unloading bullets into the car. The car contained his six-year-old son, Mr. Jeremy Martis. The man that they were shooting at, Mr. Few, Chris Few, apparently the story that the police spun was that they had witnessed a domestic violence altercation between him and his girlfriend. So they pursued him, chased him down the road. The guy took off running, had a child in the car. It was a desperate situation. They cornered him. They reached for the gun, the same narrative that we hear from a lot of these police brutality cases where an unarmed citizen winds up dead. Reached for a gun, a dash cam and body cam footage that is showing something completely different. Well, now the story is starting to emerge that Mr. Few was targeted by one of these marshals. They're actually Louisiana City Marshals, Norris Greenhouse and Derek Stafford, Norris Greenhouse Jr. and Derek Stafford. Apparently, one of them had, and this story has not been completely confirmed, but we've already seen stories about that there's more to the story. Well, there's been a few sources that have reported, please go do your own research, that apparently one of these officers had went to school with Mr. Few's fiance and had went to the school and to school together, apparently looked her up on social media or bumped into her or something like that, had actually showed up to her house, and it kind of freaked her out. Mr. Few and the marshal had words about it, and the marshal was in civilian capacity. And basically, you know, was told by a girl's boyfriend, hey, you need to get off my property. If I see you around here again, I'm going to kick your butt. Now, there's a lot of guys that are listening to this that if they've been in that situation before of a ex-boyfriend or some guy just shows up out of the past, and it's very startling and very disconcerting to the lady in your life, and she expresses some sort of, you know, displeasure about that, then you're going to tell the guy very strongly, you need to stay away from here. This is not a place for you to come. Well, him being a power-hungry police officer, that pissed him off. So they eventually, and as the story is now starting to slowly emerge, the story goes that apparently he finally cornered him. Basically, they got behind him, chased him down the road. I don't know if the guy looked in his rearview mirror, Mr. Few looked in his rearview mirror, and saw that same guy and freaked out and took off running. But apparently, they chased him down the road a good ways. And when they finally stopped him at a dead-end street, they unloaded, I believe, car. Mr. Few has survived. His six-year-old son, Jeremy Martis, has not. He's dead.
And, I mean, that's all indication is Chris Few had his hands up in the air. That's what we're being kind of told right now. The two officers, I believe they're both on, what, $1 million bond right now? So they haven't picked up. It appears like it's cold-blooded murder.
The Louisiana DA has also recused himself from the case because of some relation to the victim's family or something. There's some sort of rigmarole about that as well. So it's now the wheels of justice are going to start spinning wildly one way or the other. We hope that justice is served in this case, as is not served in so many other cases like it, where police officers are allowed to walk, that force was justified, things are swept under the rug, all of the records are tidied up and filed away, and that person just becomes another casualty, an unarmed citizen murdered by a power-hungry police officer.
When describing the body camera footage from the shooting, the state police superintendent, Michael Edmondson, said that it was the most disturbing thing I've seen, and I'll leave it at that. So
that's pretty strong.
It is.
Usually the narrative will come straight out of the police. Well, we want to get all the facts in this case before we make judgment, blah, blah, this. And they'll always try to spin it in a very neutral or, in some cases, a positive way. Well, no, we believe that our officer was fully justified, blah, blah, this, this, that, and the other. And, you know, here we are again, 6 years old. And why the police, even, let's go ahead and we'll play the, we'll spin the Fox News narrative. Well, there has to be some sort of reason, or there has to be some sort of, you know, this person was a cold-blooded thug or this, that, and the other. Now, this is a man with his child. Driving down the road, these guys found, oh, there he is, we found him, finally. Start chasing after this guy. He freaks out, looks in his rearview mirror, recognizes the guy, and sees police lights. Ooh. Can you imagine being in that situation? The guy that you just told to get off your property, to leave the woman of your life alone at her request, suddenly shows up behind you for revenge with blue lights going. Remember the case in Madison County that we reported several months back about that very same thing, where the activist that was actually trying to help the handyman out wound up being brutally murdered. That murder's still unsolved, by the way. I mean, just...
sad world we live in.
And the further and further we look, I mean, there's just more cases like this everywhere. Trip. You ain't going to tell me. I'm a police officer. I can do what I want when I want. And, of course, as like a lot of these other cases, both of these police officers have had civil lawsuits. I believe one of them had 5 civil lawsuits, judgments rendered against him, and he's still behind a badge. I mean, how does that happen?
It's the world we're living in. You know, is
this what we pay our taxes for?
It is. We excuse the authority.
Is this why we elect these people that go on and put these people in place? Is this why we do this? Of course not.
People live in fear. And because people live in fear, that they look at the authority and they say, they're there to keep me safe. So when an authority figure goes and kills somebody in cold blood, you're always going to find that person that excuses that circumstance, because they're going to say, but they're keeping me safe. They killed that person, not me, not my family member, so I'm safe. It must have been a bad guy. And that's the psychology
and
of
what
what's
we've done, though,
going
is
through
we have with our tax, with our taxpayer dollars, though, we basically, we've got some government pincher puppies that we have fed human flesh for so many years, and now we're starting to look like dinner. That's what's going on.
It's really scary, and you know, I want to definitely point out that I don't think every police officer in the country is like this whatsoever.
Absolutely not. This is the police officers we're talking about are a minority, but they're getting away with it. And there's so many of these There's so many of these good police officers, quote unquote, that are helping these police officers get away with it.
Yeah, that's the scariest part, is because, you know, you're going to have this in society to some degree, even if it's small numbers. But when you have something happen where a cop kills somebody, they're just, you know, given vacation for 2 weeks or less, and they go about their business, nothing happens. That is the saddest, scariest part of all of it. They have a license to kill. That's what that badge has come to represent in 2015. And again, it's not all officers, but it's happening. And 100 good officers are not stopping the 10 officers that are out there that are killing people. We'll have a special guest that I want to go ahead and bring on the show now. One of our fantastic journalists, haven't spoken with her in a while, Ms. Claire Burnish. Claire, how are you doing?
I'm doing excellently well. How are you?
Can't complain.
What's up, Ms. Claire? How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing wonderfully. How are you?
Oh, I can't complain for a fellow of the job.
Hey, Shannon, you got me kind of hooked on calling her Miss Claire, too.
Uncle Nick, how you doing, man?
Oh, pretty good, hanging out.
Well, Killer, how is life out on the West Coast?
Nick didn't want to answer that question.
Oh, wow.
Sorry, it's actually really good.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's wonderful out here. I couldn't be happier.
Y'all got missile tests and surveillance drones, and wow, that's just
the green glow in the sky. There's something wonderful about that.
That was freaking awesome.
The best part was the laser flashes or whatever that was, the light show that came out soon after. It was like the secondary propulsion system went off or whatever, and it's like, you know, a huge plume, and then all of a sudden you see like green flashes of like lights and stuff, and that was the after watching some of the videos some of my friends took from right here off the literally right here where we live, it was pretty clear that there was like these weird green flashes of light that are kind of hard, in my opinion, to explain.
They explained it already, though.
Y'all are freaking out or something, man. Y'all got some good buddies.
Crazy.
Yeah, swallow that pill of narrative, right?
One of the things I was saying, man, is that, you know, if we have like a missile, like, why is it going to be so apparent? You know what I mean? It's almost like, you know, if you're going to have a missile, you don't want people to see it coming from like 500 miles away. You know what I mean? It's one of those things you want to keep kind of covert.
Yeah, yeah. We're in San Diego, you don't want to see it in Utah.
You know,
but,
yeah, people were in Arizona, the next state over, and they're like, oh, yeah, we saw it too. And it's like, dude, if you're going to fire a missile at people, why in the hell can everyone see it coming? It's like the dumbest thing ever.
Let the world know.
Well, it's kind of like when George Bush invaded Iraq this last time and gave them a month head start to get all their weapons of mass destruction out of the country before they came in. And, yeah, same thing. Hey, guys, we're coming. We really mean it. We've already shot a missile off, so you got like an hour. You better get your ass on the move.
I trust our government. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, right.
I trust the government at least 5% of the time.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Hey, you're doing 5% better than me.
Yeah,
I'm a little below average because Congress has like an approval rating of about 13%, right?
Yeah, so, but that's a rise.
I'm a little below.
It's like 7% or something. So
they're up this year. I mean, they're only up to 13%, but they're up.
Well, it must be all these like wonderfully entertaining debates that are going on.
Which are wonderfully entertaining.
Hey, now the Rand Paul filibuster was pretty cool. I kind of bumped me up to at least 6% for like 3 minutes.
Three minutes, and then it was over.
And then it was back down to zero.
So I'm not gonna make that joke.
I want to go ahead and touch on something we talked about a bit at the top of the show. Claire, you've got a couple of articles up at the top of the page right now. The NSA story. Go into a little bit. We discussed kind of a brief outline at the top of the show. More in depth for everybody.
Well, this is truly a beautiful thing. I've never been so excited reading a legal brief in my life. This judge put an injunction in place to end bulk collection of metadata by the NSA. So effectively, finally, bulk metadata collection is ended. The thing that's wonderful about this is this judge took the time in his 43-page brief to literally put the epic smackdown on the NSA and the government. He used some incredible language and a little bit of subtlety to essentially say that everything the NSA is doing is bullshit.
And the best part of it all is that Edward Snowden is sitting on Twitter like giddy right now, man. Just like, totally like happy as hell that this ruling has come across, because it's finally kind of really validating all the stuff that he risked his neck for, man. I mean, he's still at risk of there's still a slight chance of assassination against Edward Snowden. I mean, it's still there. I don't think it's going to happen.
Oh yeah, that's a given. Come on now, Trump's already said he wants his head on a silver platter. President,
you don't think Rubio wouldn't do it?
No.
Well, I mean, there's also a chance that Snowden is just a grain storage drone. You know, he's not even a real person. He's just a drone created by the government to store grain. And
he doesn't blink very often. I've noticed that.
Man, this. I mean, this election thing, man, is just the most horrible. You know. It's completely...
It is really bad when you start using a game show ding-dong noise to regulate
this.
Your
think
presidential
this.
Debate.
And now, let's really welcome to the stage, Donald Trump!
Nick,
this
I don't know if you...
It's extremely huge, but for, you know, the GOP. And you know they'll do it again with, you know, the Democrats.
Yeah. It's not being mentioned in the debate.
And
it's
enormous. It's enormous because the idea was... And even this judge called it out about like Congress's farce of kind of allowing this metadata collection to go on for 180 days until USA Freedom goes into effect, which everybody knows is also a joke. But you know, it's like this judge called out all of the.
Is it called Operation USA Freedom, or is it just the USA Freedom Act? Right?
Well, they just had to drop the operation.
They should call it Operation
American
Freedom, because you know, unfortunately, this bill privatizes the data collection of all of America. So basically what they're doing with this bill is they're saying, look, we're not going to have the NSA collecting your data. We're just going to have the service providers collecting the data for you, and whenever the hell we want it, we just grab it from them.
And interestingly, actually, in this judgment, part of the problem with this was in 2013, this exact same federal judge ruled that the NSA collection was not only unconstitutional, but virtually Orwellian. So this judge actually knows what's up. Like, I really like this guy now. And so we had this in place in 2013, but then in August of this year, in late August of this year, his ruling was reversed by an appeals court because they said that the people who had brought the original lawsuit against the NSA did not have the legal standing to do so. They had no place to make this constitutional argument. So then this, you know, they get the chance to go back in, they have everything in order, they amend the lawsuit, they go back in and they, you know, they say, you know, this is ridiculous, we need to end this collection. And the judge is basically coaching the lawyer, telling him as the trial goes on exactly what he needs to do to make sure that this collection will be stopped.
So basically what the story shows me, man, and like this guy put out a comment after the ruling that was like over 40 pages long. And like this one judge, I can't speak for the whole because we all know the court system is messed up. But this one judge that just ruled on Monday against the NSA, he's actually on our side.
Yeah, he's he really he's is. Like our he's at least to me, he's like my next hero next to Edward Snowden. Just to read one quote that he says, to be sure, the very purpose of the Fourth Amendment would be undermined were this court to defer to Congress's determination that individual liberty should be sacrificed to better combat today's evil. So essentially, even though it's a misquoted thing, the, you know, the trade-off between security for liberty, he's essentially saying that's correct and the NSA is wrong and, you know, everybody should be vindicated and they need to just quit right now. So this is really a beautiful thing, and I could not have been happier with the ruling itself. It wasn't, he did not hold back. He did not make it like a subtle point. He made it a direct scathing argument and derision against the NSA, and I'm thrilled.
That's absolutely great news. Me being the cynic that I am,
you're
I'm just like
the same thing I am.
I mean, yeah, it's just going to go to the back room now in Langley, and it's going to, you know, set up as, you know, a bakery.
But how, we're gonna how much government too. Money? How much money has the government appropriated for this?
They have that huge facility sitting in Utah that they're not just going to be like, oh, well, we can't do this anymore.
I mean, here in Alabama, what about the Google metadata collection?
Well, that's what the Freedom Act is helping.
Well, you know, the NSA complex that everybody knows, the big black mirrored sort of building near Washington or in Maryland or whatever, for many years, the NSA actually denied it existed, despite the fact that, you know, millions of people passed by it on their way to work. You know, so they're in this incredible state of, we are trying to do what we want to do and ignore all of you. And, you know, you don't see us, but, you know, this judge is like, everybody's onto your game. Nobody's buying your bullshit. Cut it out. And it's just the most amazing thing. I recommend that everybody read this ruling. It's worth it.
Absolutely. Well,
I tell you what, I'm going to go ahead and grab a caller real quick. We've had a lot of callers calling in.
Let's do it. Throw one on.
Area code 812, welcome to Anti-Media Radio. I am your host, S.M. Gibson. Tell us your name and where you're calling from tonight. Area code 812.
Yeah, I'm not from 812, but no, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, go for it. So, we've had this story up since yesterday about the Saudi videos getting released. What's your take on those videos coming out, Nick?
The beheadings?
Yeah.
I mean, damn, dude, it always brings me back to this selective view on you know, human rights, I guess you could say, when it comes to Saudi Arabia and when it comes to our foreign policy. You know, we recently overthrew the government of Libya, you know, strictly on the basis of, oh, they had violated human rights, protesters. You know, it's kind of ironic to see that, you know, while we overthrow the government of Libya and overthrow Gaddafi, and now, of course, Libya has fallen into this horrible, basically a failed state. There's like, it's not just a civil war. It's like so complex. It's beyond a civil war. There's like over 10 different warring factions in this country now. Now that Gaddafi is gone, the whole country has fallen into complete chaos. You know, and we overthrow that government because of what we claim are human rights abuses. And then at the same time, we see this video surface recently. You can find it through the anti-media. The video was in there. I took it out today just because we don't want to go too far into the realm of brutal, you know, imagery and that kind of thing. But, you know, at the same time that we overthrow a government of Libya, we do business. And when I say business, it's a lot of business, right? I mean, as referenced in the article, it's billions and billions of dollars in arms deals alone, not even counting the oil and all the other stuff that we do business with them. In arms alone, we're talking about excess of like $10 billion with Saudi Arabia. And so, you know, we see these beheading videos come out, and it's like, you know, if anybody in their right mind sees someone being beheaded in a country, it's like, holy shit, what? That's horrible. That must be ISIS or something, like, you know, that the media tells us is like a really bad place. You know what I mean?
And it's a public execution too. Like that is important to this story. It's just like, hey, what are you doing on a Tuesday afternoon? We're gonna haul three guys out here and chop their heads off. Come watch.
Yeah, and I mean, it's like, nobody's going to see that on TV and say, oh, that's got to be a country that we're probably like invading, or that, you know, that's something that we should be attacking. The fact of the matter is they're not going to see this on TV. They see the ISIS beheadings videos on TV. Leaks about them doing public beheadings. It's not covered by the media at all. I mean, at all, you know, and so it just goes to show how the media works hand in hand with the foreign policy. You know what I mean? So since Saudi Arabia is a U.S. ally, they sell us oil. We sell them arms. They pay a bunch of money for the arms. They sell us a bunch of oil. And we have all these interconnected links to that country. And we all know that Bush was heavily tied to them. It's come to light that Hillary Clinton, through the Clinton Foundation, is heavily tied to those interests over there. So, you know, there's a heavy influence within the government with these guys. For all we know, Rubio could very well be the next president. He mentioned the Project for New American Century like three times in one time slot. He had like a 1 minute,
less than 30 seconds.
He had like a 1 minute speaking time frame, and he literally mentioned the New American Century three times in 1 minute. And so, like, you know, we're starting to see what the, you know, the these underlying things that are coming through right now. About human rights, we would not be friends with Saudi Arabia. We would not be friends with Israel. You know what I mean? We would be completely shunning these countries and saying, look, you guys are killing a bunch of people. You know, Israel killed like 3,000 people last summer, and a bunch of the people were children. Saudi Arabia is conducting multiple war crimes on basically a regular basis within Yemen. And like, why are we selling them tens of billions of dollars in arms? You know what I mean? And if we actually cared about human rights, so that's, we got to throw that whole argument out of the picture. We are not operating on a human rights basis on foreign policy. And there's like really no argumenting that fact. I mean, we are operating on a geopolitical corporate interest based basis, you know, on which, all the moves that they're doing, it's not to make democracy. It's not to protect your freedom. It's not to bring freedom to people in Afghanistan.
Pure hegemony.
That's not the case. Because if you look at The Intercept, you see that short documentary they made on that blimp, that surveillance blimp. You know how we had that blimp get loose a while back from Maryland?
Yep.
So in Afghanistan, they fly these blimps literally 24 hours a day. And they're surveillance blimps. And they put propaganda into the media in Afghanistan that basically makes the people think that this blimp can see every single person's actions every single moment of the day. And so they self-censor their own actions because of this blimp.
It's a similar action to what they did out here in, you know, the Southwest, where it's like, you know, that whole like crazy missile test thing. It shows of power, quote unquote power, you know, it's like, everybody, people are so fed up and people see through it and they're just like, no, that's it. It's just like supporting Saudi Arabia and Israel. I mean, you're talking about Saudi Arabia where you have journalists, you know, somebody scheduled to get like 50 lashes, you know, every session where it puts him on the verge of death for months where he cannot receive any more because the punishment is so severe and ridiculous. You have, you know, other people for being a journalist, and you have other people in Saudi Arabia who are going to be like beheaded and then crucified. And then you have like Israel, who is making a move to make it legal to jail people younger than 14 to the age of 12, you know, for these supposed knife attacks that have been proven to be false. I mean, we are in bed with these terrorists. To call it a war on terror is the biggest fallacy that there is out there right now.
Well, speaking of the Saudi Arabia issue too, Saudi Prince bin Talal, up until the beginning of this year, he had one of the highest stakes of ownership in News Corp, which of course is Rupert Murdoch's corporation. And he sold down. He's only got like 1% left now, but he still kept his holdings in 21st Century Fox. So we're talking about, you know, Saudi royalty being involved in U.S. media and wondering why some of this stuff is not reported.
Yeah, man, because, you know, these guys, these media operations, they make excuses for these awful regimes that are part of NATO. I mean, if you look back at like the example of Amber Lyon, you know, she's basically a whistleblower. She was working for CNN, making these CNN short documentaries and things like that. And she came out, she blew the whistle. She's like, we're making stories that make dictatorships look nice and friendly. And she's like, I can't participate in this anymore. And she got buried. Like, she got buried and they discredited her as much as they could. And then she's been shunned from the mainstream media and all that stuff. She has her own website now called like Reset Me. I think it's called reset.me. And you can like, she's focused on like alternative subjects and things like that. But like, you know, there's been examples shown where the media shows this blatant hypocrisy that favors some regimes, some dictatorships, some monarchies. In fact, one of the guys on the debate tonight said he wants to support the monarch, the king of Jordan for 100 years.
A thousand years.
The guy's like, I want the monarchy of Jordan to be in place for 1,000 years. I shit you not. He said this in the debate, right? And so we're supposed to like think that we're spreading democracy and this other kind of thing. We got these presidential candidates in the debate saying we want to maintain this monarchy, this kingdom in Jordan for the next 1,000 years. I mean, this is like,
we're trying to hold back
from laughing. You know what I mean? Because it's just like a total shit show.
It reminds me of the Glenn Greenwald quote. It was, the only time the U.S. government pretends to care in the slightest about human rights abuses is when they're carried out by countries that do not cooperate.
Yep.
And that's true for sure. You know, there's also something that's being ignored entirely by the media, and it's been a year. There was an American journalist who was working undercover on the Syrian-Turkey border, and her name is Serena Shim, and she found that it appeared to be from the footage, and now the footage is missing, keep in mind, but she found evidence that UN vehicles, like official UN vehicles, were transporting arms across the border to ISIS. And she apparently had information about this, and she'd been in the area for a very long time. And suddenly she dies in a car accident that her cousin was involved in as well. And, you know, it was so underreported by the media, and it almost has to be by design.
It was completely ignored. It wasn't underreported. It was completely ignored.
I mean, this is an American journalist there, American journalist, who's being completely ignored by the media. She was obviously killed.
You remember when the dude got his head cut off by ISIS. Mm-hmm. I can't remember his name. He was a pretty obscure journalist,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I'm not trying to degrade his work or anything like that. But all I'm saying is that we got to look at the selective coverage by the media, right? So we see this story where that the dude got his head cut off by ISIS, and it's like, we're not supposed to show you this video, but here it is anyway on CNN for 24 hours.
I believe it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you know, while they show us that on 24-hour news coverage, this story about Serena Shim, which is another American journalist that was found dead under very suspicious circumstances while she was in the middle of uncovering some very bad dirt on Turkey and the UN.
Enormous news.
She's like, you know, dead all of a sudden, and there's absolutely zero media coverage. I mean, this is a pretty big story, man, and it's very, very telling that there was no talk about this story. And it's like the guy that was beheaded by ISIS got all these headlines for so long, and all the TV networks were covering it, and this story gets absolutely nothing. It's very suspicious.
It also, because I mean, you know, not only was she working undercover, she was trusted by a lot of the locals and very well respected. What she was uncovering was really well known, apparently, in the area where she was reporting. But obviously, they were trying to keep it under wraps. And then she gets in a car wreck and is killed. And they manufacture pictures to show, like, what had happened in the wreck. Like, what originally happened, the photos look differently than how the narrative ended up being propagated.
Now, keep in mind, when did this happen? It was a year ago. It's just past the anniversary
of her death.
This is before we started finding out that, yeah, like, you know, there was that leak from the BIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency, that was saying, look, we suspect that ISIS will be a side effect of our policies out there, and they went forward with them anyway, you know, and
they desired the rise of a caliphate.
This is before the admissions that the CIA was funding the rebels and all that kind of thing. It's stuff that we talked about a long time ago, but it's stuff that hasn't been mainstream information for that long. So, I mean, most likely what she witnessed was UN vehicles bringing weapons for Syrian rebels.
That's the thing, is that it was as if the narrative locally was Syrian rebels, but it was more deeply ISIS. Like, she'd actually uncovered evidence that it was ISIS that was being supplied with these weapons. I mean, this was an enormous deal. And, you know, coincidentally, she's a journalist. and she gets in a car wreck, and, you know, there's no evidence in her car of what she found, of course. You know, her recordings were never found.
I mean,
even though she'd reported on it.
I guess we can leave it at this, I guess. And I just, I guess it's very coincidental. Let's just say this. It's very coincidental that the United States government tried to overthrow the government of Syria in 2013. We all remember that. Scott made the meme, that the No War with Syria meme with the green peace sign that literally, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of people made their profile picture. We were very much a part of that. It seems very coincidental, to say the least, that they went from, okay, we got to overthrow the Syrian government, to, oh shit, the American people don't support that. And then it was like, what, a year later where they're like, oh my God, ISIS, we got to go into Syria because ISIS is there and we got to stop ISIS. You know, and it has nothing to do with Assad. And Obama has reiterated this so many times. How many times has Obama said it? We are not, you know, it's the not about area. Assad. We just want to, support rebels that are going to fight against ISIS. And you wonder why the hell does the U.S., like, what geopolitical interest does the United States have in fighting it against ISIS? And don't get me wrong, there are some, because ISIS does control a few oil fields and that kind of thing. But for the most part, it's very minimal.
I have to bring up here, I think this is incredibly relevant. A few months ago, I wrote on the Law of War manual and how things changed. And they literally classified journalists in the same category as ISIS. And it just seems awfully funny that suddenly journalists are being, you know, they turn up executed around the world. Yeah. I mean, this is not a coincidence. It's because journalists are the ones who are dedicated enough to finding out the truth, and they go and they dig their nose where the American government doesn't feel they belong. And
it reminds me of another kind of infamous car wreck, too, of someone that was working on a big story. This was surrounding the CIA. It was Michael Hastings. And that happened in this country. You know, we're not talking about overseas.
Car wrecks are a really easy way to hide an assassination, to be straight up.
Yeah, they really are. And
I'm not saying Serena Shim or Michael Hastings were assassinated. I've also not seen enough proof to say they weren't, but a car wreck is a pretty easy way to disguise it.
It is, and it's actually a sad state of affairs when you have, like, where I was going up in the mountains investigating the whole Nestle thing, and when I got really excited about making the trip, the most common comment was, don't get in the car wreck in the mountains by Nestle. It's like when something becomes sort of an accepted idea that is going on, and, you know, no matter if it's wrong or right, when people begin to accept the idea that anybody can be assassinated for any reason, you've reached that point of no return, in my opinion.
Exactly, and that's why that ruling by that judge today was so strong.
It's awesome.
He condemned he condemned just this overreaching surveillance state government in general. You know,
well, so he said he told it like it was. He said this has not done shit to prevent terror attacks in any way. Nothing has ever been produced to prove that bulk metadata collection has prevented any terrorist attack whatsoever. And I mean, he calls it out as flatly as that. It's an amazing ruling. This is just perfect.
Hopefully something will change with all this. I'm the skeptic that, you know, thinks it's just going to be shifted to another room. But it doesn't take away from what Snowden has done. It definitely doesn't take away from this judge making his ruling. You know, it doesn't. We sit here and we harp on about a lot of the policies of the government. That doesn't mean every single person in the government is some horrible person. This judge has proven it. It's like, hey, you know, stop doing this. You're an idiot. But at the same time, there's always people that go back behind those people. It's like, well, we're going to do what we want anyway.
Because there's money already appropriated for the NSA and what, you know, of course, I know that they've transferred a lot of the data collection over to the carriers, over to the Googles and the AT&Ts and so on and so forth. But there's still a lot of money that is still going to remain exactly where it is. It's just going to move somewhere else, that this will be called that, and it'll continue just like it always does. The government's just
well, and actually
they're not going to get to be as overt about it for at least for the time being, until we have another Freedom Act roll down the pipe.
It's not like they were a bird about it in the first place. It just, you know, it was conspiracy. It was, if you think that the government's collecting your information and, you know, keeping tabs on you and able to spy on you at any moment, you're crazy. You're a conspiracy theorist. And then Edward Snowden comes out and is like, hey, guess what they're doing? I've got the paperwork to prove it. And then all the crazy people were vindicated. And now I think we want to see the government go to a spot where they're like, okay, we're not doing this anymore. Let's go back to the way things were.
But, you know, there's an interesting thing that came out today as well. Like, after this ruling, it kind of was, you know, way in the sidelines. But apparently the morale at the NSA is kind of at an all-time low.
Yeah, yeah. Because according to this article, and it was really an op-ed, but it was by an NSA insider. The guy's dad was in one of the original people at the NSA. He worked for the NSA himself. He's currently a security contractor. And, you know, he basically penned this article that we saw today that was talking about how the morale, ever since Snowden came forward with these leaks, dude, basically what this article was saying was that these guys at the NSA were so brainwashed into thinking that, like, they literally were doing the right thing. They thought by spying and collecting the bulk data of every American citizen, they were so propagandized and brainwashed into thinking that was the right thing to do, and the morale was, like, pretty high, right? After Snowden, when the public opinion, when it got scrutiny on these programs and the public opinion started shifting, well, the people at the NSA that worked there, like, they, you know, the low-level workers like Snowden was, their morale is now sunken. And well, and this guy literally is in regular dialogue with NSA employees and things like that, and he's writing this op-ed from a place of inside information type of thing. And so it really goes to show that, you know, what's going on right now with the leaks and the media pressure and everything Glenn Greenwald has been doing, which is absolutely amazing, is actually having an effect, you know. And according to what I can see right now, and we talked about this before we called into the show, is that the Supreme Court or the federal court in many instances is actually reflecting the public opinion, like the thoughts that the people are having, the way that people want the courts to rule, like on the NSA. The courts are actually reflecting the public opinion more than Congress is. And in some cases, of course not in all the cases, but no. In many cases, the courts, you know, we have almost what look like rogue judges. I wouldn't call them rogue, but they're very close to being rogue judges, where they're literally going out on a limb and fighting for us, you know. And so, you know, it really does show with this public shift, the people that actually work at the NSA have also felt that pressure. And even from their own friends and family, asking them questions like, dude, like, you know, you work for the NSA. Is it true that you guys are, like, spying on all of our, you know, and it's going to take a toll on you when your little brother is asking you those kind of questions and things like that. You know what I'm saying? And so it really hasn't had an effect. And so I guess we're going to start seeing the repercussions from, you know, this morale shift within the NSA. Maybe we'll see a lot more whistleblowers start coming to light. We've seen a lot of whistleblowers in 2015. We've seen a lot of whistleblowers come forward. The most recent one on the drone papers and that kind of thing.
Yeah, that was huge.
So it's really changing the climate for the whistleblowers. They have more confidence. The morale is low. I think people are now that are working within these agencies are starting to question their own, you know, their own practices. They're like, you know, if you're working at the NSA and you're thinking like, damn, dude, maybe I shouldn't be spying. Shit, my mom and my, you know, my family is caught up in this dragnet, and we're, you know, potentially if I wanted to, I can go look at my mom's text messages like, do I really want that to be taking place? And so there's people within the NSA, I think, that are going to start stepping forward. And hopefully maybe some of them will step forward to us here at the Anti-Media to talk to us and let us know, like, look, there's some injustices going on, and let's expose it so that the people know what's going on. We can start getting the court system, the government, all those things to start reflecting our public opinion. But we also have a lot more work to do on the public opinion side, because people are so distracted with so many trivial things. They're not even paying that much attention to this NSA ruling, you know? It's not even that big of a deal, you know? It's only the kind of activist-leaning people that are really taking a big notice of this ruling, you know what I mean?
Well, even Glenn Greenwald was saying it's like if you don't, you know, to think that the government isn't spying on you is basically one of the most naive things you could do. I mean, you know, he's saying at this point in time to not understand the breadth and scope of this spying and, you know, the potential programs that are in the background. And even Snowden said this on his tweets on this ruling. He even said, you know, don't underestimate basically the power of all these programs you don't know about yet. You know, it's like he knows what's going on, and he hasn't either. Either there are documents he has that he hasn't revealed yet, or just from his personal experience, there's enough going on that he's saying, you know, there's much more
basically
in the background.
What he's saying is that, like, from what I saw, it's like, look, this is a great win, and I think, you know, I know Claire and I are kind of celebrating tonight. We're just kicking back. We got all of our work done early, and we're just, you know, hanging out. But, like, you know, we're celebrating this.
Netflix and chill. Is that what y'all are
yeah,
doing?
No.
No.
More like writing articles and
chill.
Okay, fair enough. But,
you know, this ruling is a victory, you know, and it should be treated as such. But at the same time, and, you know, Snowden definitely reinforces this, is that there's a lot more work to be done, man, because the USA Freedom Act is going to shift all this data collection over to the private sector. It's very much a privatization of surveillance, more or less. So
the companies will have the data. They will collect the data. And basically, it's the same program in place because the government can literally, they don't have to have a warrant or anything. They can go in and say, give us this data.
Another big coincidence here, CISA. Yeah, right, the new spying legislation that has been coming down the pipeline. Senate just passed it, right?
Yeah.
Senate just said, okay, yeah, let's go ahead and pass this. Obama has more or less already shown willingness to sign it. You know, he's just waiting for Congress to put it through. You know, and CISA provides immunity to the corporations, Yahoo, Verizon, Google, AT&T, all these companies that have your data. This new CISA, you know, bill basically gives them immunity to share it all with the government. So in the end, they're probably the NSA is basically taking care of two birds with one stone. They're deflecting the blame from themselves, saying, look, we're not going to collect the data, while at the same time saving money by not collecting the data themselves, just giving it to these corporations, and in return giving them immunity from prosecution and probably also giving them other political favors and things like that. To make up for the fact that, you know, they have to do all the heavy lifting on the data end of things.
Yeah, but the thing that what is really being ignored here, and CISA is a big deal, you know, of course, but all it is a precursor for the TPP and the SOPA provisions in TPP, which literally will change the face of the internet. Because all those memes that we share that have, you know, say a picture that's done by a certain organization in the background, you can be prosecuted for those under the TPP. Like, this is a huge deal. The TPP will change the face of the internet as we know it. I mean, everything that we do without thinking twice about it now with the TPP will be changed dramatically. Like, it will make information gathering and information collection almost as difficult as it is already in China and, you know, North Korea and places like that. I mean, this is a huge deal. It needs to not be ignored. And I've heard it suggested, and I think it's a great idea that I think people should be forming groups while we have this, well, now less than 60 days to review the TPP and take a chapter that that resonates with you, understand it, and share the information. So if we can't stop the TPP because Fast Track is in place, you know, who knows? It's probably going to be voted in. At least we will know what it is that we are subject to and how we're going to be prosecuted.
Well, all right then. Y'all covered about 900.
Hey, she just dropped the mic too. You guys can see that because there's no video here, but she literally dropped the mic and walked away.
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding.
But, you know, for me, I don't think that we really – I'm not going to claim any kind of victory until we're still able to have Edward Snowden come back to this country and it's not, you know, going to jail or going to some – secret trial, whatever they're willing to do with him. He can't even land in Germany right now, and he helped, you know, give Germany all this information to find out what's going on, plus with the American people here, and we're just like, hey, it's okay. Trump wants to kill this guy.
I'm reading I'm on the article page on the anti-media, the one regarding the NSA ruling here. I'm reading the comment at the bottom. And the guy is saying, nothing will change until those who authorized and did such things are brought to justice and Snowden is exonerated. As the guilty will, of course, never be held accountable, Snowden will never be free. just the way things are.
That's it. You know, James Clapper got a promotion after lying to Congress about this, right before Snowden, you know, gave us the revelation of what was going on.
Yeah, it's the big, like, gold medal of, like, you did good with your propaganda, man.
And propaganda gold star.
Yeah. It is. He got, and that's the thing. You know, we've got idiot Obama over here saying, I'm going to protect whistleblowers. You've got a whistleblower over in Russia. You've got the guy that lied to Congress giving him a promotion. It's like, what a joke of what's going on here. And I don't know if y'all caught this in the debate tonight, speaking of the TPP real quick, was the moment Trump went on about it. They asked him what his thoughts were, and he said it was terrible. And, you know, so he asked him why it was terrible, and he gave his whole China speech, and they ended the question, and we're moving on. And Rand Paul pipes up and goes, by the way, China is definitely not in the TPP. And the whole place just went silent. And they tried to go to commercial, but it didn't really work out. But yeah, so Trump's just talking about China and the TPP.
I'm still a little creepy.
Yeah, man. Who was it? One of the other candidates mentioned how basically the TPP is going to be used to contain China economically.
Right. They called it, like, I can't Kasich remember. Oh, no. It was either Ruby or Cruz, I thought.
Yeah, one of these guys was like, yeah, we need the TPP because we're going to use it to geopolitically contain China. And I was like, oh my God, someone's finally talking the truth out there.
Right, because they upgraded Malaysia on the human rights scale from a tier 3 country, which is like the worst violator of human rights. They arbitrarily just like inflated their number to a tier 2 because Malaysia is a strategically vital country for, you know, military and trade and economics and everything else.
Malaysia basically overlays the entire China Sea.
Right. I mean, and so we have
islands
to have
throughout the whole place. I mean, this is,
we have
when
to
it
have
comes
Malaysia
to marine law and that kind of thing. Malaysia is one of the strongest countries out there because they got all these islands spread across this huge area.
Despite that they like practice human slavery and sexual slavery and everything
and
else.
Despite
like,
the fact,
legalized.
Just like with Saudi Arabia, Malaysia is one of the biggest human rights abusers in the world when it comes to slave labor, child labor, sex trafficking, all of the worst things in the entire world. And we're like, oh, yeah, let's include them in the TPP.
Yeah, our U.S. government has an affinity for them.
Yeah, and so, you know, the entire TPP public relations fiasco going on right now is pitching the whole thing as a jobs creation bill, and it's going to, like, fix the economy. Same exact shit they told us about NAFTA, you know what I mean? And you know, NAFTA has very mixed results, and I think NAFTA has been a net negative, you know, with the things that have gone on with NAFTA. I think it's actually had a negative effect on the economy, both of the U.S. and all the countries involved in it. But, you know, the TPP is being pitched as this thing to fix the economy and create jobs and all this other thing. And then one of these candidates, off script, he's like saying, like, no, we need this thing to geopolitically contain China, more or less. And that's something we've been saying on the anti-media for a while. And this is exactly what it is. It's not about creating jobs. And if you think it's about creating jobs, I mean, that's a pretty naive spectacle because the government isn't out there to create jobs.
Yeah,
they're out there to preserve the empire. They're doing geopolitical maneuvering over there, and that's exactly what the TPP is.
It's all about American hegemony and how America can rule the world, as if having, like, what is it, double the budget of the next 10 countries combined for military? I mean, you know, we heard tonight on the debate, what was it, Carly Fiorina is talking about, well, we need to, like, make sure that we're the strongest country in the world. I'm
and
like,
she went off
what
on,
the
like,
hell are you
15
talking
different
about?
Countries. She's exactly. Like, we need to increase our military budget to, like, all these 15 countries.
It's like, we already have that. We already have that in place. Everybody already hates us.
Throw money at the problem. That's how they look at every single thing. But it's all about making money. That's the bottom line, and they're there to keep their hands in the pot to keep these corporations making money. The thing, I don't think they're concerned about the TPP and selling it to people now as far as the whole jobs argument in this. I don't think they care because all it takes is Obama at this point. Congress gave away their power and, you know, just here it is, sign it or don't sign it.
Well, no, they have
they're going to have
down.
Yeah.
The Congress has an up or down option. This is all they have. They don't have the ability to amend it. They passed that fast track thing, so now it's up or down. They either vote for it or they don't vote for it. And
they
all
have
in the case
no way to throw anything out. They can't negotiate any part of it. They're just – they had to agree one way or the other.
Yeah, and so, you know, the chances are, according to the – you know, according to what we know about the oligarchy here in the United States, they don't really represent the will of the American people. They represent the will of special interests. Special interest is lobbying majorly for the TPP. So, you know, you could expect that's the direction it's going to go.
Well, we've got just a couple of minutes here. We are running out of time. Shannon, any last thoughts before we go tonight, sir?
Y'all keep it real, seriously, because I know the GOP crap real, that's for sure.
We will be back on Thursday. Thank you so much, Nick. Thank you so much, Claire. Same anti-media time. This is your host, S.M. Gibson. Anti-media radio. Ow. No, through the stereo. Yo, here we go. Go through the stereo.